Okay, so in addition to it having been Rosh Hashanah the last 2 days, which I'm sure you guys noticed, it also began Shemitah. So I figured we should do at least start our discussion of Shemitah now. I didn't really want to wait till after Sukkot to get into it. We'll start off light, relatively speaking, but still, I wanted to get into it. You know, obviously, at this point, not much of the halakha of Shemitah will affect you yet. Give it a few weeks, and that will. Unless you have a farm or a garden or something, in which case it has started affecting you already. But in terms of the food that you'll buy, it won't affect you quite yet, because fruit won't be for a while, because it's already on the tree. So it's shishit, right? Considered fruit from last year. Vegetables, as soon as they start picking, it'll be relevant. But Shemitah. Okay. So what I want to do first is try to understand, again, this is more philosophical, what is the rationale for Shemitah? But this is going to segue into the second topic we're going to do, which is how does this affect not just the philosophy, but the halakha? And in general, we won't spend too much time on it, but in general, there is a question to the extent to which the philosophy of the mitzvot affects their application. The sort of common view is that it doesn't. That may or may not be true, right? The sugya appears explicitly twice in Chas, of Darshan time of the Kra or ain't Darshan time of the Kra, whether you actually expound the rationale for the mitzvot in order to affect halacha. That's how Tosfot understands it, right? It's not clear how we paskin, right? Where the majority of Rishonim seem to paskin ain't Darshan time of the Kra. The Rambam, according to many Acharonim, paskins Darshan time of the Kra. So that's really the question, right? Being one of the big questions, right, the Rishonim were very into Tamei Mitzvot, right, into the philosophy of the Mitzvot, and the question is why, if we, according to most people, we pass on the position of Yehuda that ain't Darshan time of the Kra, right? We don't expound the rationale for Mitzvot. So the majority of Rishonim seem to follow Tosfos, who says, listen, there's a difference between understanding reasons for philosophical purposes and for juridical purposes, okay? Meaning, which is a fancy way of saying that it's very nice to understand the reason for mitzvot because it deepens our experience. That's all important, right? To understand what God wanted, to paint the picture of what God meant to do in the Torah. All that is valuable. What you're not supposed to do is try to say, oh, well, this is the rationale for the mitzvah, so now I know when it applies or doesn't apply, right? Like, pig was usher because it's not healthy, right? This is like a classic example. And therefore, now, if we know that it is healthy, so it's kosher, right? Yeah. Right, and right, one of the key sources that people will point to that you're not supposed to do this are a series of midrashim about Shlomo, which appear in different forms. It appears in the Bavli, it appears in the Yerushalmi, it appears in Kol Rava, that Shlomo HaMelech tried to do exactly this, right? He tried to understand the mitzvot, and right, so he, for example, the Gemara's example is that he said, oh, the Pasuk says that I shouldn't have too many wives because they'll lead me astray. But I'm so smart, it won't lead me astray. I can have 1,000 wives. And lo and behold, they led him astray, right? And he ended up, according to Pshat, worshipping Avodah Zarah. Yeah, if it's brains, if that's all it is. Right, I don't know if they're persuading philosophically or, you know, whatever. Or whatever, it's part of the culture, or whatever. Exactly. But yes, Eli is correct. That is one of the classic midrashim they point to. But, now, obviously, there were Rishonim who just didn't like Tom Amitz for this reason at all, right? They just didn't want it. But many follow Tosfot and say, no, philosophy is important. But we don't let it affect the application of the law itself, right? They remain philosophical, not juridical, right? So that's a very good question, and that's why not everyone agrees to this, right? So first of all, the Minchas Chinuch thinks that it's the opposite is true. We only look for philosophical reasons if they're going to affect halacha, right? Only why? Because he says, listen, to just understand the reason for the mitzvot, who are you to understand God? But if it's going to affect the halacha, so then there's a reason why you need to understand the philosophy, which is it has practical implications, right? Oh, you know, chanami. Some things are chukim, not all. Sure. Sure. But not everything's a chok. And not everyone understands a chok the way you're presenting it. Well, it's a big machok, what a chok means. Yeah. Well, is a machok, is a chok something that doesn't have a reason? Is a chok that something has a reason, but it's hard to understand? It has a reason, but it's impossible for human beings to understand, right? It could be something that really has no reason, like the God has no reason for it, just arbitrary, right? Meaning, anyways. But there are also Rishonim, like the Rush, who say, no, depends. If it's not clear what the reason is, like it could go in different ways, but then it doesn't affect halacha. But if it's like 100% clear what the reason is, of course it affects halacha, right? That appears in the Rush, that appears in the Shem Yuchas al-Rajba, versions of that. But that's not what we're going to deal with right now. What we're going to start with is trying to understand the reason of the mitzvah, but keep in the back of our mind the extent to which this might also affect the law itself. Okay? Because in Shemitah there does seem to be a little bit of an overlap between the philosophy and the application of the law. Right? Again, briskers will tell you this never happens. Briskers will tell you that never, there is no, like true briskers will tell you that never happens. Right? Reb Chaim is attributed, right, as said, right? This is like the classic thing that they call from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim said, my goal in life is to understand the vos and not the farvos, right? Which is the what and not the why, right? The what is the law, what is the nature of the law, not the why, right? That's philosophy, this is halacha. That sharp distinction is not always tenable. I know that makes me I know this makes me a brisker kofer. Right? I'm fully aware of this. Don't worry about it. I'm okay with that. So look, in some cases it is, right? In some cases it is, in some cases it isn't, right? I think you have to be careful, right? In some mitzvot, right? You can't just write off a mitzvah because you're convinced that you know the rationale. Because first of all, you might just be wrong, or there might be multiple reasons, right? But sometimes you see that doesn't seem to be the only voice, shall we say, in Rishonim and Acharonim. And that is indeed the caricature of briskers. Thank you. Very good. Right. That is indeed the caricature of briskers. If you have ever read Halachic Man, you will know that is a caricature of, again, is it clear that the Rav meant that as an ideal? No. Right, because the Rav wrote as like a German, so he wrote typologies. Right, so halachic man, yes, a pure halachic man would really not care about the rationale at all. But as someone, there was an article written years ago. It's like would halachic man have been able to write halachic man? Right, where the answer is obviously not. Right, meaning the pure typology of someone who is a halachic automaton. Right. Could not have written a philosophical book about the nature of halachic man, right? That's not, that wouldn't have happened.
Really an outstanding question I had is like both for like the people who like, is it safe to assume that the people...
It's never safe to assume anything. Yeah?
That the people who say that we allow the time and this is to affect halacha also don't hold that like, I've seen a number of sources that there's like,
And say it again. Is it safe to assume that people who don't want the halacha to affect that do want? I don't know how much they go because Doraita is one question, there or another. They might or might not overlap. How you understand them? Okay. Anyway. You can say a lot of things. This is by way of introduction. What? Yeah, but they don't necessarily. They might say for their right, or they might not for their or vice versa. Who knows? Yes?
But isn't, like, philosophy, like, still just an inherent part of it? Like, how can you pick out, really? But how could, like, you know...
Okay, I see you're all bad briskers. It's fine. I'm fine.
Interpretation of, like, the what is going to be influenced by your philosophy.
Okay. Good. So you're a bad brisker. Okay. That's fine. I don't care. No, in a chanami, I'm not, I'm much more of a methodological pluralist. I don't, I'm not like, I'm not convinced by any of these strong formulations. Like, sure, I don't jump to understand the nature, like this actual form of the law, right? The juridical application of the law in light of the philosophy. I don't run away from it either, right? If it's mitbakesh, right? I'm hesitant, but I don't think it never happens, right? Sometimes it doesn't happen. Sure. Sometimes there's a split. We all know that, right? In any good, put it this way, and this, with this we'll go into the thing. In any good legal system, law is not reducible to that which motivated it. Okay? What do I mean? What do I mean? Why can't you run a red light? Yes, Ellie. Good, and what will happen if you, right? They're there to keep it smoothing, they're there to keep you safe, right? Everyone agrees, right? There's not like a big machloket, I don't think, right? Okay. Why is it that if it's 3 a.m, you're on a road, it's completely deserted, and there's no car for 10 miles in any direction, but there's a red light camera, and you run the red light, why will you get a ticket? You're going to go before the judge and say, Kula Maide Akon Waitim, everybody agrees that the reason you have a red light is to make traffic go smoothly and to keep everybody safe. I looked, there was no car for miles around. It was 3 a.m. What? It was a Seger. I don't know. There was nobody out. I know there was nobody out, right? And you get a ticket. And the judge says because law, in order to be good, cannot be reducible to its rationale, because what does that allow? People to rationalize it away, right? Because you'll do it at 3 a.m, there's no cars, and someone else will do it at 2 p.m, but he happened not to see a car, right? Right? Law, and therefore, even if everybody agrees that law is motivated by some rationale, that doesn't mean it's reducible to its rationale, or should be, right? Law is not just ethics or whatever, or pragmatism by another name, right? It is the formalized structure that emerges from those motivations, right? But the law is still distinct, right? Sometimes, in the case of the running the red light, it's not counterproductive, it's just pointless, right? Meaning, we all agree that in order to protect the law, sometimes you have to enforce the law even when the law is pointless, right? That's the red light, right? The more controversial case is that sometimes you have to enforce the law when it is counter to its rationale. Right? But that's also possible. Right? Now that might be a reason to change the law.
Yeah.
Right? But that's not necessarily a reason for it not to currently be the law. Right?
I mean, just
right?
Oh,
right? Meaning, right? So for example, if you say that enforcing contracts, right? Let's say enforcing contracts is important because it makes sure that people, right, are honest, they don't take advantage of each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We all know that if you have a billionaire, right, a billion-dollar corporation with very expensive lawyers, they can write very, very good contracts that DAFKA will be legally binding and will trick people, right, and it will actually hurt people. And nevertheless, the courts will often uphold the contracts. Why? Because at the end of the day, what are you supposed to do, right? Meaning, on balance, it's better to uphold contracts than to, right, allow people to break them just because, it's, right? In the end of the day, the integrity of the system depends on people caring about contracts. If judges could just, you know, say, I don't think you really understood this, right? That would undermine the importance of contracts. We understand that, right, the better way to solve the problem is not to, right, case by case, say, in this case, the contract was being tricky, right, but is to rather set rules. Exactly, right? Meaning it's like in Canada, they have this very interesting law with taxes, right? In America, you hire very fancy, right, accountants to, like, keep the letter of the law, right, even if not the spirit, to save you money on taxes. You're not allowed to do that in Canada. In Canada, there's this interesting law that if it can be proven that an accountant is trying to keep the letter of the law but go against the spirit of the law, that's also illegal, right? And you can be arrested for that also. That's also considered tax evasion, right? So you can set up a law like that, but until you have a law like that, right, you have to follow the letter of the law, because that's better for the integrity of the system.
Right, so doesn't that, like, thinking suggest that whatever the law is just for the sake of it being a law, I need to follow it?
Well,
that's what it becomes.
No, well, but what actually happens is that, so the danger is, right, the question is, but here's the question, right, is when you look at it this way, is it that you say, listen, now all I'm doing is worshiping the law, right, or do you say, no, I just understand that practically, right, the goal of society is to get the most number of people living the best life, morally, pragmatically, whatever. And if we just tried to live on principles, that wouldn't happen because too many people would find excuses, right? The best way to get the most number of people to live the best life is to protect those values through law. Even if that means that sometimes people will use the law against you, right? I'm not worshiping the law. I'm just recognizing that law is a tool we use. What? But, so it happens to be that the Rambam says the same thing is true of God's law. That law is only good for most people in most times and not all people in all times. The Rambam thinks that's definitional to all law, including Torah. That Torah was not meant to be good for all people in all times. It was meant to be for most people in most times. It's binding for all people in all times. But it's only good for most people in most times. And therefore, it is totally possible for the Torah to be binding on you and bad for you at the same time. That is possible. Doesn't happen all the time, but the Rambam says that it's philosophically possible and, in fact, philosophically necessary. Because he thinks that's definitional to law. You can disagree, but he actually thinks that's definitional to law. It's an amazing piece in the Morning Mukhim. Shocking piece. Okay. I don't know how many people attack him for that piece. They attack him for a lot of other things. I don't know if they noticed. I'm not sure if they noticed how radical that piece was at the murder of him, that to comment on it. Maybe they did. I don't know. But I don't think everyone comments on it. No, it's not one of those that gets attacked all the time. They care much more about the nitty-gritty, like Carbonot, right? That one, it's like, yeah. He just says it. He's very adamant about it, too. Okay, fine. Anyways, so with that sort of background about the complexity of looking at rationales, let's try to understand the nature of the mitzvah. Fine? So let's start with the psukim. So Shemitah is mentioned in many times in Chumash. I only gave you four places, but the truth is that it's mentioned many, 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 many more. According to Chazal, it's mentioned much more because they read many psukim that are about Shabbat, which really be about Shemitah, which leaves you with many, many possibilities, but let's start. And in each case, I want to try to get at different things. Right, both. What do you think the rationale for the mitzvah of Shemitah is in these psukim, and how might that affect the law? Again, understanding that it might not affect the law, right? But how might it affect the law? Okay, so we start in Parashat Mishpatim. Okay, now context. Parashat Mishpatim. What is Mishpatim all about?
All about civil law.
Civil law. Very good. Civil law. That's what it is. Civil law. Tort law. Right. Criminal law. Law. Right. Law. Yeah, a little criminal law, civil law, tort law, all that stuff. Okay, but there is a little bit of ritual law that's thrown in there, right? And one of those is Shemitah, okay? Good. Three psukim. Who wants to read them? Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk, you, Pasuk good. Well, yeah, having a chumash might be helpful. I made sure to bring my one volume of Krav Gedola with me today, so not only would I have all the psukim, I'd have all the mafarshim. It's a very helpful little book. I bought it when I was your age, but it's kept me, you know.
I have a question. How would you buy, like, all of these models? I mean, I know that some of them are like, plain just look like they say rough setup, but, like, where do you get, like,
ideas,
like, when you
guys... What's it called? What here's not... What here is, like, surprising? You read and listen and read and listen and read and listen. I don't know. What do you want to answer to that? I don't know. How do you know things? I don't know. I've been learning for a while. I don't know.
There's also the search function on Safari. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sure. And there's Bar Ilan, and then if you read through it, and if you sit there and you run a search and read all 500 terms, you'll come up with this. I don't know. It's not what I did here, but this is pretty easy. Meaning, there are many people who have already collected these. This is not like, Shemitah, this is not hard. Like, literally, you open up any Sefer in Shemitah. Most of these I took from, one of my neighbors writes the Smicha curriculum for Balabatim, and he put together the first thing he put on Shemitah was this. So I think most of these sources I took from his sheet. It was easier to cut it down that way. If I look at someone else's, but the rationales for Shemitah, I mean, you're not going to find too many chidushim. Like, people have been talking about this for a while, and considering it's Shemitah, everyone's been talking about it recently. You know? Okay, fine. So, Shemav Chav Gemal, what does it say? Who wants to read it? V'shei Shanim? V'shei Shanim Tizra et? Good. So for 6 years, what do? Plant and gather your produce. Very good. Okay? So, before we move on to the next pasuk, Hashvi'i tishmetena nitashta. What is the name of the seventh year according to these pasukim? Shvi'it. The name, the proper name of this year according to these pasukim is Shvi'it, the Shana Shvi'it, the seventh year. Is its name Shemitah? No. Does Shemitah appear in these pasukim? Yes, as a noun? No, as a verb, thank you. As a verb, right? As a verb. This is going to be important, right? But note that at least in the Sukkim, the name, the identity of the year is Shana Shvi'it, it's the seventh year. Shemitah is a verb, it's something that happens or that you do. Those are two different formulations, okay? That's a very important different formulation, right? When we get to Shemitah Ksafim, remember that, which is that, right? It is a question of whether it happens or you do it. In these psukim, what happens? You do it, right? You do it, right? You are mashmit, right? You relinquish control. And then what happens to the food? What does it say here? V'achlu evyonei amecha. The poor, and whatever's left over, the animals. And then the next psukim, or it's not clear whether it's, in context it sounds like it's Shabbat, but Chazal understand that it might be about Shemitah, which complicates things, which is, Sheishit yamim ta'asem ha'asecha v'yamat v'yitish v'ot, 6 days you shall do your work, on the seventh day you shall rest, l'man yanuach shorcha v'chamorecha v'yinafesh v'namatcha v'agir. Okay, so let's focus on these psukim. First things first, right, as we noted, the year is called... No! Thank you. Here, it's called Shvi'it. It's not called Shemitah. It's called Shvi'it. Right? In fact, most of the time in the Torah, when we refer to this year, it is referred to as Shana Shvi'it. It's very rarely called Shemitah. Shemitah is usually a verb rather than a noun. That's important. Okay? Okay. In these psukim, someone want to tell me, is a rationale offered for the mitzvah of Shemitah? Okay, so I hear a yes and a no. I hear a yes, no, and a kind of. Good. Okay, so now I will erase, I will pretend for the moment that you are not staking out a position, okay? I want you to defend each position. Fine? Who wants to defend the position that the psukim here are offering a rationale for Shemitah? And if so, what rationale? Go, Moshe.
All right. So, as said,
the
Shemitah is called Shemitah because it's like Shemitah.
No, that's the next pasuk. Start with pasuk Yudalef. It's talking about Shemitah, obviously.
Okay, whatever.
Vashvit, mitish mitzen and itashta, okay. Okay, good. Good. So Moshe defends the position. He doesn't claim the position, but he defends the position that one potential rationale for Shemitah is to take care of the poor. How would he read the Pesukim this way? In the seventh year, you relinquish control. Why? How would you translate the Vav there? Right, it's not just an and. It'll be like a so that, right? Right, so, right? Right, a causative, right? Right, you should give up control so that.
Okay,
so now, right? So one possibility, this is a so that, the poor, right? That one of the reasons of Shemitah is to take care of the poor. You relinquish your control so that you give up, so that they can, who takes this position? Does anyone stake out this position? If you didn't get to it, it's fine. Like I said, I don't think you needed to read all of it. I wanted to focus on the circuit, but we can run through it. Yeah, thank you. The Rambam. The Rambam takes out the position number in Zion. Right? Call a mitzvah asher sefarnu milchot shmitah v'yovel mehem lechem lal b'nei adam v'archaval b'nei adam kulam. The purpose of these mitzvot is to bring compassion. Kimo she'amar v'achlu evyonei amecha v'yitram tochal v'gomer. Right? That the poor will eat, right? It'll make you compassionate. Right, and it leads to kindness, to graciousness towards the poor, to your slaves, right? Yovel for slaves because you free them, and Shemitah because you give up on the loans, right? You let them eat the food, right? So the Rambam, at least in one of his rationales, stakes out the position that the purpose of the mitzvah is to is chesed towards the poor and whatever. Good. Now, someone want to start pushing back. Kobe started pushing back for linguistic reasons. Very good. So Kobe has a very, very careful read, which is, wait a second, next pasuk shows you what it looks like to give a rationale, and that is a magic word called lima'an. If the Torah wants to say so that for the purpose of, it actually knows how to do that. It's called saying lima'an. Right? Right? But this might not mean so that, right? What might it mean? If it doesn't mean so that, then what might it mean? No. Vid. Yeah, exactly. And, meaning, if you give up control, mistama, the poor people eat it. Meaning, you gave up the control, and like, and that, right? That's not the rationale. It's just the result, right? You give up control, and whatever. What? Oh, okay, so if you want to push back, so you'd say, no, maybe it does, you know, no. Like, but at the end of the day, why say it? And then you, right, so you could counter and say, well, I don't know, mistama, rich people have stored up food at home, and poor people are going to schlep out to pick.
Maybe it's saying, it could be saying, oh, yeah, this would happen. But honestly, it's obvious how it happens, saying it for a reason, therefore, it must be that.
Oh, good. So we have, so far, Moshe has defended the, yes, one of the rationales of Shemitah is to help the poor. Kobe said, defended the position that maybe not, right? And then he backtracked and said, but maybe also yes. Okay, good. Who wants to push back and say not only yes or maybe not? Right? Who wants to push back and say, no, this is not about the poor. Okay, Mordechai and Zach, go. Mordechai hasn't yet contributed, so we'll let him go first. And he's very adamant that it's a no. It says that the poor people will eat, and this is therefore against poor people. Yes, go.
Very against poor people.
Good.
So, it almost...
By the way, one caveat is, like I said, I didn't give you all the sources. So, like, many things we might say in Shir are said in sources, even if we're not reading all of them inside, because that would be overwhelming. Okay, if you want, there's a nice little summary in the Panini Halakha. We have this on the shelf by Rav Malamud. At some point, he says, listen, all these stuff that I said are all quoted by people, but look at my footnotes if you want to see them inside, right? Like, here's a bunch of them, okay? So we'll do a little bit of that. Yeah, good. Mordechai, defend the, this is not for the poor position.
I don't know why it mentions for the poor people exactly, but it seems like it's very much mentioning it as something non-final. So it says,
good. So first, Mordechai offers. Good. First, Mordechai offers a linguistic reason to believe that it's not about the poor, which is, and that this is just a consequence, which is, it's not only the poor. It says the poor and whatever's left over, the animals will eat. So maybe it's not telling you this will happen. I mean, does anyone say the purpose of Shemitah is so that the animals can eat unencumbered in your field? Right? No one really goes in that direction. Right? The point is, the poor people, when there's free food, the first people are going to go get it are probably the people who need food. And if they don't need it, the animals will eat it. It's just a consequence. It's not the reason.
What?
Whatever.
So
you could say it's a chesed of the animals. Now, okay, Zach, what do you want to say? Oh, fine. Laman can sometimes also mean a consequence. That is true.
That's not what I'm saying. Like, as a consequence.
You're right. Laman sometimes also means something different. That's true. Okay. Now, some of the Mepharshim push back more intensely on this reason of the Rambam. And they give the following reason. Okay? It goes like this. It could be that having the poor eat the food is one of the reasons, but it's definitely not primary. You know how we know? Because what's the best? No, forget that. Just even the psukim. What's the best way to ensure that the poor people have food to eat during Shemitah? Well, first of all, give them food directly. Good. And what else? Make sure that there is food to give them. What's the problem in Shemitah? Don't work the field. If you want to make sure there's enough food for the poor people, and that was your main reason, the last thing you would do is say, stop working, right? You might say, work hard and give your money to the poor, right? But if your primary reason for Shemitah was to help the poor, the last thing you would do is freeze the economy, right? And whatever happens to grow naturally during Shemitah, you know, so let the poor people pick the lemons that were left over that grew of their own accord. Well, really? Really? Listen, if you go out right now and you find a lemon on a tree, is that Shemitah? No, because it grew during the sixth year. That's going to be true for many months right now, right? Sure, that means that you produce a lot of food and then they take a percentage of it.
As much as if they get your whole entire field.
Sure, if your field produces anything. How much wild wheat and tomatoes and do you think is actually growing? Yeah. Rav Malamud is quite a fan of this particular counterproof, which is saying, listen, during Shemitah, if you're lucky, your field produces 20% of what it used to produce, right? If you're lucky, right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. During a normal year, right, if you have a very abundant, right, let's say last year was Maaser Ani year, right? So let's say you produced a million bushels of food, right? So right off the bat, they get 9.whatever% in Maaser Ani. It's not 10%, obviously, because it's 10% after the other Maasers, so... But if you have a million, so 2%, let's say, will go to Truma, right? And then 9.8% will go to Maaser Rishon, right? So 9.whatever% will go to the poor. Fine? Plus paya, which, whatever it is, right? Again, there's no shear for paya, but a minimum of, but we said a minimum darabanan, right? And then leket, whatever falls. So let's say sacha kol, they'll get 11%, right? Let's just say, right? 9 plus percent, whatever, or whatever, 12%, I don't know, you want to be fair? Like 12%, 13%, I don't know. By the time you add everything up, right? So 13% of a million bushels is 130,000 bushels, right? It's a lot of food. Now let's say it produces 20%, right? Bikoshi, right? And are the poor the only ones who are allowed to eat it? No. They are among the people who are allowed to eat it. Everybody is allowed to eat it. Okay, but priority not really, because anyone's allowed to eat it, so are the animals, so whatever. So there's 20% total for everybody to eat. Okay. I mean, no, our tzicha, your field, your land. It doesn't say anything with grapes. No.
But fruit trees both come back.
It doesn't say. It says tizraz. Ria is mostly seeds, right? Elsewhere, you're right. In these segments, it doesn't mention them, right? It's just like your fields in general. So that's the pros and cons of saying it's about poor people. Okay. So we've now defended the it's for the poor people. Defend the position. No, it's not. And defend the position that the very, very sharply defined, right? Okay, good. Yalla. Let's go to Vayikra Chafei, which is the main discussion in Chumash of Shemitah, in Parshat Behar. Okay, so I don't really know why I took off Pasuk Aleph. I guess technically Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor is not conceptually related. I mean, it is, because mine and Shemitah is Bahar Sinai, but fine. Okay. Vayidaber Adonai El Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. So God spoke to Moshe at Sinai. Daber ben Ezra v'amar t'lehem ki tavo al aretz asher ninotin lachem v'shavta aretz Shabbat l'Adonai. When you get to Israel and the land rests, a rest for God. So far, what is the name of this year? Shabbat. Shabbat. Right? Shabbat. So far, the proper names we have are Shvi'it and Shabbat. And not Shemitah, yet. Sheisha named Yisra Sadecha. And now, as Josh said, now we start picking out particular plants. Sheisha named Yisra Sadecha, V'sheisha named Yismor Karmecha, V'asatat V'otah. Here we mention the vineyard, the field, but we also mention the vineyard. U'varishana Shvi'it. Now what's the name of it? Shvi'it, Shana Shvi'it. Shabbat Shabbaton, Yel Aretz. So it has two names. Shvi'it, Shabbat Shabbaton, right? Shabbat Vashem, Sadcha lo tizra v'charmecha lo tizmor. And you won't plant, and you won't prune. Et tzviach ketzercha lo tiktor, v'edvinvei nizirecha lo tiktor, Shnat Shabbaton, Yel Aretz. Again. Right, you don't harvest. Different types of harvesting, right? Because different verbs refer to different produce. Okay, Vaita Shabbat haaretz lachem laochla, and the Shabbat of the land will be now. This time, who eats it? Who eats it? According to Vayikra Chafei, Vaita Shabbat haaretz lachem laochla. You eat it. And your servants and the workers who are among you. Are the poor people singled out? No. Are they even mentioned? Maybe Bekoshi. Lachem is all of them. Are they singled out? No. Are the animals singled out? Yes. Next possible. So, in these sukkim, lochem yigeh leochla, it's for you to eat, right? Okay. So first of good. So this is a pretty good support that it's just a consequence. You eat it. Everyone eats it. The poor will also eat it, but so will you, meaning everyone eats it. right? Rich, poor, workers, then it doesn't matter. Right? Everyone eats it. You're allowed to eat it. You just can't work it. Right? And what, if you wanted to know here in this pasuk, what is the definition of Shemitah? What is the rationale of Shemitah? It seems to be wrapped up in one word that appears over and over and over again, which is Shabbat, Shabbat LaHashem, Shabbat, 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 Shabbat. Great. What does that tell me about? What does this tell me? According to this, do you have any idea what is the nature of Shemitah? What is its purpose? What? Okay, who says that? Who says the reason is to give the land time to break? Who says it? Give me any names. What? Oh, but you said to give the land a chance to rest for the land's sake. Who says that? That's what Moshe is saying. Okay, which is possible, that the land is going to rest. Shabbat Haaretz, right? Okay, good. Who says that? No, the Kliyakar hates it. Who says it? Okay, good. So Zach notes that that is a plausible way of reading the next perek in Vayikra, also known as the Tochacha, right? Right, the Tochacha, the rebuke, where there you hear that what? Right, that if you don't keep Shemitah, so then you'll go into Galut, right? The land will get to chill, right? You didn't let it chill during Shemitah, fine, we'll kick you out of the land and the land will chill. Okay. So what does that mean? So Moshe says maybe it means that the purpose of Shemitah is to let the land lie fallow so that it produces more, right? Let the land rest. Who says that? Oh, did I copy the same piece of the Rambam? No! Why'd I do that? Oh, sorry. I copied the same piece. I meant to copy another line in the Mishnah Berurah. That was a mistake. Okay. The answer is, who says that? In the Mishnah Berurah, I just copied the same line. I'm sorry. But it's fine. It's fine. So who says it? The Rambam, in that same paragraph, though I've accidentally copied the same one twice, right, says that another reason for it is did I put it? No, I didn't. I cut that line one too short. I'm sorry. Kidesha Adamati Frevitiz Chazek Behovarata. So that the land will become strong again. It's for the purpose of the land. Good. Someone want to tell me the problem with this Rambam and why nobody likes this Rambam? Nobody likes this Rambam. No. Leading land fallow is very important. What's the problem? So the Mepharshim have a lot of problems with this, right? No, leading the land fallow does have the potential to get, right? This is something you standardly do, right? We know this. Farmers do this. Do rotate land. Yeah, of course, right? But what's the problem? That's not the problem they have with the Rambam. They have a lot of problems with the Rambam, though. So, okay, good. One is that they have a problem with the Pesukim, which is, it does say that the land is going to rest, but what seems to be the rationale? Meaning, one more second. Let's start with Pesukim. First of all, what do they say? The problem is that it sounds like it's a Shabbat. What? Why is there a Shabbat for the land? No, that was one reason. But even within the notion that the point is for the land to rest, why is it resting? Because what does it say? Does it say, it says, Shabbat, Shabbaton Yelaretz, why? Shabbat, LaHashem. It says that the land will rest so that, for God, meaning, Right? Meaning it's not about the land. It's the land is resting to say something about God for a theological reason, not just a practical reason. That's one problem that the Mefarshim have with it. Okay? Right? The others, the Kli Yakar, I gave you a bunch of people who don't like the Rambam. The Kli Yakar doesn't like the Rambam in Yud Bet because he says, if it's just about letting the land rest, then why is the punishment so severe? Right? Right? Meaning, if the only reason for Shemitah was so the land will rest, it seems a bit exaggerated to say, and if you don't do it, we will kick you out of the land and you'll die and be miserable and exile. I mean, if it's just practical advice, like... Sure, but Shabbat has theological overtones, right? If you think that the only reason here is, right? Right, and he says, what would a better punishment be? Don't let the land rest, the land will. If you're supposed to let it rest so that it'll be more productive, then what's a good punishment? It won't be productive, right? That's what the Kli Yakar says. So the punishment should be, Yon Sham Shlo Tosiv Aretz Teit Kocha Lahem. That's question one. Question two he has is, according to this, it's only a Shabbat Ha'aretz. It's a rest for the land. But it says it's a Shabbat Ha'aretz for what purpose? Shabbat Lashem. Shein Zeh Shabbat Lashem. Kim Latzar Ha'aretz. It's the land for the sake of the land, for the sake of the land. Right? That doesn't seem to be right. Right? And he says furthermore, right? If it's about, right? Once it's about God, right? And he says besides, what does it say? If you don't keep Shemitah, I'll kick you out of the land. And then the land will get its rest. And it'll be desolate, right? That's what the pasuk says. It'll be desolate. How is desolate good for the land? I understand that resting is good for the land. But if the punishment is we're going to kick you out of the land, and then the land will be desolate, I mean, that's not really rest, right? That's death, right? That's not exactly the same thing, right? If the point is let it rest so it's productive, the punishment shouldn't be rest so that it's dead, right? That just doesn't seem to be right. That's his problem. The Abarbanel has another problem, which is, what are we promised will happen if you keep Shemitah? Right? The pasuk said what? The land will be fruitful when? In year 6. It'll be super fruitful in year 6. So they have enough food to last 6, 7, and 8. Right? Yes, because you weren't planting in 7, so it takes a good half of 8 to get things right. So it needs to be for 3 years, 6, 7, and 8. The Mefarshim divided exactly what that pasuk means. So the Abarbanel says, yes, that is a great way to rest, is work you triple as hard the year before, and only then give you a vacation. That's how vacations work, right? No. A good way to have vacation is, you know, work normally and then get a day off. It's not squeeze everything out of you and then... Right, if you want to enjoy your vacation, right? When you guys want to enjoy vacation, right? Okay, fine. So you don't like the Abarbanel's critique. Fine. He has other reasons, but you're right. But the second possible reason that the Rambam does suggest is that it's a rest for the land, and people don't like it either because it might the Pesukim talk about Shabbat Hashem, it seems like the punishment is Mugzam, or overworking year 6 doesn't seem to be a good way to get the land to rest. Others just say, look, you can't reduce the Torah to a bunch of practical advice. That's not what the Torah is, right? It's just not what the Torah is. Okay, fine.
Yeah,
now, what is the... But there's something else I want you to notice in the Pesukim besides the rationale. Yes, Moshe. Okay, good. So you can say another problem is let it say that. Let it just say it. This is so that the land rests and is productive, rather than... I'll go. That's another question, which is that normally rotating is not once every 7 years, right? It's like every 3 years, every 4 years, right? Or every 2 years, right? Every other year. Now, some of them are saying, no, that's exactly the point. If you keep Shemitah, God will give you a miracle, and you will only have to rest it every 7th year, right? Oh, okay. Fine. Another thing that I want you to notice in these psukim is that in the psukim in Shmot, okay, in the psukim in Shmot, the responsibilities of Shemitah are on who? On the farmer, right? The land is called Shvi'it, And the farmer has responsibilities of tishmetena unitashta, right? Leave it alone, let it relinquish control, right? In these psukim, there seems to be another formulation, which is? What? When you say that Shabbat, right, there'll be a Shabbat on the Aretz, right? What does that start, what does that formulation start to sound like? Meaning? Right, so first of all, you might have to rest yourself, right? But what else? It's not just that the farmer has to do something. What does the farmer have to do? Make sure that the land rests, right? And we're going to see in the next topic. Okay, I want you just to hold this in your mind, right? But the next topic, this is going to be one of the major questions in the poskim, which is, what is the nature of Shemitah? Is the nature of Shemitah that you have to stop working the land, or that you need to make sure that the land rests? What? Is there a difference between those formulations? Oh yeah, give me it. Good. What difference? Wait, Zach was in the middle of a sentence. What's the difference? Okay, so how would that manifest itself? What might be, if you have to make sure the land rests and not just you rest, what might, well, think about it. Okay, think about it. What difference might it make?
Yeah, you gotta, like, stop people from
wanting to do your place. Oh, you're good. You might have responsibility to stop other people from working, right?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. So there's all types, as we'll see, there are all types of manifestations of that, like, what if a non-Jew works your field, right? Or what if you live in a city, a secular city, like Modi'in, let's say, right? And the government, I don't know if it does or doesn't, works the fields. Did you just violate Shemitah? You don't even own it, but you're like a tax-paying member of Modi'in. Are you now violating an Isser? Right? Do you have to go and protest, right? Stop working by field! Stop it! Right? Or divest yourself of any claim in the land. These are actual shilas, but we'll get to them afterwards. But I want you just to notice how in the psukim, right, these questions of, right, start to become important, right, both the formulation of Shemitah and the rationale, right, these start to bleed over from philosophy into, right, the actual application of law. Okay, good. Let's at least try to get one more formulation, right? Let's take a third formulation. Let's say that the point is that the land should rest. But we can say it differently than the Rambam, which is that the land is supposed to rest, but not just so the land rests, but the land should rest so that what? So one possibility is so that you rest. Right? That was what Mordechai said before. Right? Is that one possible way of looking at it is that the land should rest, but that's not really the emphasis. The point is that the land should rest so that you rest. And why is it important that you rest? Okay, so now we have different formulations. One is to say so that you recognize God, right? That when the Pasuk says that Shabbat Haaretz, Shabbat LaHashem, what it means is, this is possibility three, that the point of Shemitah is to force you to recognize some sort of theological reality, like
God owns everything.
Who seems to say that? Before the Chinuch. Before Rashi. The Gemara, right? That's a simple pshat in the Gemara, right? The Gemara says, "Atahu Talmida." There was a student who came. Amarle, and he said, "My time of Dishviata. What's the reason for Shemitah?" Amarle, and what did he say? Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Zaru Sheish Dishmitu Sheva Kedeshet Teid Usha Aretz Shalihi. Rest in the 7 years, so you know the land is mine. And Rashi says, Rashi paraphrases a pasuk from Dvarim, which says what? That sometimes, what's the cost of wealth? You forget God. So if once every 7 years we make you stop working, that is a statement. It's a theological statement. Right?
What?
I don't know. He's paraphrasing. I don't know. The Torah Tamima builds on this, and he says, that's why, after the ellipsis, he says, right, why is it you're punished so badly for Shemitah? Because of this. If you don't rest, you're showing that the land isn't God's. Right? And that's bad. Right? This is heresy of the highest order. Right? It's terrible. Right? Okay. But there is another possibility, another formulation here, which is what Mordechai said, which is there's another way of saying it's about Hashem. And that is, maybe it's not just that it gets you to recognize that God is God, but it also makes you rest. And as some of the Mepharshim have it, what will that do? Right? If you rest, well... So it could just be it'll make you appreciate God, but some go even farther and they say, no, you know what it means that it's a Shabbat la Hashem? It means that by forcing you not to work, Mimela is giving you a not-so-subtle prod to spend a year in Koilel, v'chadome, right? If you're not working, what else are you going to do, right? Watch Netflix all year, and all year. You're like, nowadays, in a Hanami, nowadays you'll watch Netflix. Right, you'll splurge. Right, you'll get Netflix and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime and whatever. You know, you'll rack up a bill of whatever per month, and you'll have enough movies and TV shows to last you till the end of time. Right, but what can you do? There was a time when you didn't have that, and you know, if you didn't work, then you might learn Torah. Come on, let's learn. Well, I know, right? You're right. You're right. It was ancient times. No, it was before that. They had VHS. I mean, Mamish, it was really ancient. What? Exactly, right? It's like... Yes, you're right. They had to tape their shows. That's how long ago the Psukim were written. They were taping their shows. Right? Yes, this is like a parody, right? It's like a parody of like, you know how ancient that was, right? They couldn't watch things when they wanted. It's like the idea that there wasn't a TV, well, Khalila never happened.
What if you need one show over another show?
No! God, no, what would happen? Yeah. Listen, guys, I'm not even that much older than you. I'm older than you, but like, not like, what? I do, but like, I mean, it's true, but like, I'm still like, what am I, 15 years older than you? Right? Yes. How old are you? 18? Then I'm 15 years older than you. I'm 33. I'm only 33. Right? What? Yes, I look old. Thanks. I appreciate it. Don't worry, when I was in Moshe, when I moved to Toronto, it was 6 years ago. I was 26, 26, 27, whatever it was. People thought I was like 40, right? Yeah, it makes me feel great. It makes me feel great about myself. Yeah. Yes, all philosophers are old. Oh, thank you. That's a nice spin on it. You knew too much Torah. I just can't be. Right. Okay, yeah. Anyways, so, but some of the Mepharshim say, no, Shabbat Aretz doesn't just mean that you're going to recognize God. What it means is that because God is forcing you to work, so society is going to be a more, right, they're going to spend time on valuable things, right? It's not that working is not valuable, but just like on Shabbat, right? So, I many of them apart from go in this direction. The fourth reason, right? It's right. Pnimi Halacha has a nice little formulation on it. One second. And he says like this. The tour says as follows. Right? He says the tour says about Shabbat, quoting right the Midrash, that Kach Amar Lama Kadosh Baruch Hu Israel. That God told the Jews, Banai, my children, lo kach katapti lechem b'torati, lo yamush tefer ha-torah zemipicha, v'yigidu b'yom v'layla. Don't I tell you you're supposed to learn day and night? Avo pishatem osim malacha kol shisha yamim. And even though in practice you can't learn day and night because you have to work 6 days a week, yom ha-shabbat yaseh kulo torah. Right? On the seventh day, you'll have time to learn. So what you should, in an ideal world, what you should do on 6 days a week, you do on Shabbat, and then he says, "Gvish amru legabe Shabbat, kach tarech lomar legabe Hashanah Shvit, Shvita Shabbat noada kedei shiuchlu Yisrael lahagot b'Torah." That the point of resting is so that you will study Torah. Vayidei ze yizku legalot et erech avodav yichlu lekayim baretz. Okay, so that's possibility four. Is that it, when we say Shabbat LaHashem, it doesn't just mean that you're going to recognize God. It means that you'll have time to do godly things. Okay? And then, but notice that the difference in formulation here is that this formulation focuses, again, on the person, not on the land. Right? Letting the land rest so that you acknowledge that the land is God's, at some level seems to put the emphasis on the land. Saying that you let the land rest so that you have time to learn puts the focus back on you. And as we said, this is right, and this is where the line between the philosophy and the potential application of the law get right starts to blur, because it's important. The different rationales point in different directions. Good. Another way would be to look at Shabbat, for sure, right? But this is number four, okay? Let's see. We should stop, but let's quickly throw out some more. That we'll come back to it. We didn't even get a chance to do Dvarim yet, but fine. Well, you know what Kobe said is what? Yeah, that's fine. I don't need you to read all these inside. I want you to read the psukim and notice right what they're picking up on, rather than right read every source inside. You know what? Let's stop. But let's just say next time, make sure if you haven't done Dvarim, do Dvarim. The Chinuch will give you three reasons. I gave you the Siach Shaul, which is Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who's going to go in the direction that Kobe said, which is maybe the way to try to understand it is to do like Rav Melamed here, is to focus on the Shabbat Shvi'it connection, right? And maybe that's going to be a way to get some reasons. Hopefully, I don't want to spend too many days. I mean, let's try to spend one more day on the rationales for the mitzvah on Sunday, right? So that before Yom Kippur, we can try to start at least getting into the legal manifestations of it, right? And after Chagim, we'll start getting to much harder Shvi'itz, I guess, but you know, we'll start light and, you know, just get our feet wet in Shemitah. But let's try to do one more day on this, okay? Like I said, there are many, many, many more sources I could have given you, but I wanted to just, you know, if we do a representative sampling. It's like, every time I say that, it's like, you could have given us more sources, it's so much. It's not so much. Yeah, but they're like easy sources. These are like the Farshim and the Psukim, whatever. Okay, I'm going to stop because I see that our next year is